All right, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Aleph and Aleph on the first line. Shalach lei Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, the Mari Bar Mar. Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda asked the Mari Bar Mar, Boy mina mi Rav Huna. Can you please ask Rav Huna this question? The question that we've been dealing with through this sugya, which is, Adar b'chatzer chaviro shalom midato. Tzarich lad lo to schar o lo? Is zenenet v'ze lo chaser? What's the din? Is the din he is patur, or is the din that he is chayav? They want to know from Rav Huna what he thinks the din is. Adahochi, in the interim, nachnaf shei de Rav Huna. Rav Huna passes away, so obviously they can't ask Rav Huna directly. So Amalei Rabba by Rav Huna, Rav Huna's son Rabba answers the question for them. Hochi amar Abba Mori. This is what my father said, Mishmei de Rav, in the name of Rav. Eino tzarich lalot oskar. Zenene v'ze lo chaser is patur. You don't have to pay any rent. Basucher bait miruvein, malez char de Shimon. A person who rents a house from Reuven has to pay the rent to Shimon. Shimon, my buddy Tay, what's he doing here? Hachikamar, nimtza bayit shel Shimon. If he figures out that the house belongs to Shimon, malalo schar, then he pays him rent. The case here is where Reuven misrepresents that he owns the property. He enters into a rental agreement with Reuven, and it turns out it's not Reuven's property, it's really Shimon's property. So then he has to pay rent to Shimon. Tarte, that's a stira. These two positions are contradictory, are mutually exclusive, because if you say that Zenenev is a lo chaser is patur, so then in the case here where Shimon had no idea that his property was being rented out. So if he had no idea his property is rented out and the guy's there, Reuven misrepresented it. Shimon's not losing anything. It's again Zenenev, the guy who's in there is benefiting. Shimon's not losing anything because he has no clue or he wasn't intending to rent it out. It's seemingly here you have Zenenev is a lo chaser. In one case he's saying it's patur, one case he's saying chayav. So Rabba Rav Huna answers, Ida kaim el agro, ida lo kaim el agro. Along the lines of what you're suggesting over here, depends on the nature of the property. By Zenenev is a lo chaser, the reason it's a lo chaser is because he didn't intend to rent out the property anyway. So therefore it's lo chaser. On the other hand, by Shimon, their case was that he would have rented out the property, but he didn't know, or unbeknownst to him, there's someone else in there right now renting the property. And there it is, chaser, both because he can't rent it out, but we also saw yesterday in the Balei HaTosafot and the Rosh, even if he can't rent it out yet, but the fact that somebody's in there makes it look like the place is occupied, and therefore people don't inquire or people don't ask about the property, that itself is also a chaser over here. Itmar Nami. It was similar member of Amoraim, Rabbi Chiya Ba'avin, Amarav. So here again, it's the name of Rav, Amrila, Rabbi Chiya Ba'avin, Amarav Huna, or in Rav Huna's name. And we just saw the member in the name of Rav Huna, Amarav. Adar b'chatzer chaviro shalom midato. Eino tzarich lalot oskar. So zenene v'zeh lo choser, in that case, where he lives without permission in the house. He's getting benefit, the other guy's not losing. You don't have to pay rent. Osucher bayit mibnei ha'ir. Maleschar the ba'alim, someone who rents a house from the public, whether it's public housing or something that's owned by the city, he has to pay the rental to the ba'alim. Again here, ba'alim ma'avitayu. Where did the ba'alim come into this picture? Achikamar, nimtzu lo ba'alim. Ba'alim lam schar. All of a sudden they found out it had owners, so maybe it was property that was unknown to have ownership to it, so the city took it over and rented it out in order to get tax revenues for the city, then they figure out that it's really owned by somebody. The rental income has to go to the ba'alim, even though it was rented out without or unbeknownst to the ba'alim. And in a sense, they weren't losing anything. Tarte, again, it's a stira. It seems to be zenene v'zelo chaser. In one case, you're saying chayav. One case, you're saying patur. Hadakai medagra, hadalokai medagra. Depends on the nature of the property. If the property was not a property that he would normally rent out, then that's zenene v'zelo chaser, and that's why you're a patur. In the case where he would have rented out the property, and instead, in the previous case, it was Reuven who's renting it out, unbeknownst to Shimon. Over here, it's the public or the city that's renting it out, unbeknownst to the owner. In those cases, he would have rented it out, or he would have collected rent on this property. And therefore, zenene veze chaser. And because of that, you have to pay up the rent. It's interesting here, you have two aspects to this. One is, which is, in these cases, you have ze chaser. That's what the Gemara makes it clear, that there's a loss to the owner, whether it's Shimon or it's the Ba'alim in this case. There is a loss to that party because they would have rented out the place. What about the zenene aspect of it? He's getting benefit from the property. Now, the truth is, he's paying rent to Reuven, or he's paying rent to the city, what that indicates, or what that shows is his willingness to pay for a property. So he can't claim, therefore, oh, I would have squatted somewhere else, I would have lived somewhere else. That has implications if he's paying below market rent, which is that, of course, if he's paying full rent, he should be indifferent between paying the rent to Reuven and paying it to Shimon, or paying to the city, or paying it to the Baalim. The real issue comes up is when he has it at below market rent. Reuven, obviously because it's not his property, is renting it out below market in order to encourage people to come in and rent this place. All of a sudden, Shimon figures out what's going on, and he wants the full rent for the property. Over there, the individual can't make a claim, no, I would have just squatted, or I wouldn't have done this, it's only because it's below market rent. He's already indicated or shown that he's willing to pay money, maybe not that full value, but over here, if he wants to remain in this place, he's got to pay market prices to Shimon, or he's got to pay market prices to the Baalim. So that's really probably the case where it really has meaning over here, because who he pays to should not really impact on him. It really makes a difference if the price would change or something dynamic here would change, as well as the fact as to whether he can remain in the location, who has the rights to throw him out of the location. Okay, now, Amarav Schora Marav Huna, Amarav, Hadar B'chatzer V'chei Baro Shalom Midato, Ein Tzarich La'olot Oschar. So once again here, we have Amarav Huna Amarav. So again, we see Rav Huna Rav Huna consistent here, that if you live in your friend's place without his knowledge or without his approval, you do not have to give the rent. Again, it's a case of Zenene v'zelo chaser. Mishum sheneemar. So now they quote a pasuk from Yeshayahu, which says, Ushiya yukat shar. Desertion, or being empty, strikes at the gates, or causes the gates to be ruined. So here, what the pasuk is indicating is, that when a place is deserted, there is a downside to it being empty, or being a desolation. Because there is destruction that is wrought, simply because of desolation. Or simply because there's no inhabitants over there. All right, so Rashi explains over here, what is Ushia Yukat Shar? Rashi says that it means Sheid Shemoshia Michatet Shar Bait Shein Bnei Adam Darim Bo. These Sheidim, or these demons, take up residence in places that are desolate, or places where there's nobody living. So therefore, this guy who lives there protects the house from these demons occupying it, because it's, right, that is akin to Gemara and Brachot, that one should not walk alone into a deserted destruction or churva in order to daven, because it's dangerous, because of the shadim that occupy it. Lishna achrina bait shu sha'ui v'yachid, meaning that it is empty or alone, me'in adam yukat shar, mizikim mechatatim bo. Then the demons or the damaging properties get a hold of it. That's the way Rashi explains it. Rav Haigon brings an alternative, which is a woodworm is what this shi'iya is. And therefore, when something is left desolate or empty, the woodworm eats away at the wood, rots the wood. And because of the rotting wood, that causes the house to slowly crumble or fall apart. So those are the two possibilities about this. Amar Ravashi, the didi chazilei menagach ki Torah. Marva Rashi says, I saw them, whether that means according to Rashi, saw the shade, or whether according to the Rav Haigon, it means that he saw these worms at work, that they're menagech Torah, they gore like an ox. So for Rashi, that means that just like the goring of an ox is damaging, so too the shadim do some sort of damage, whether that's because they look like se'irim, and they also have horns as se'irim, or according to Rav Haigon, that means just like the horns of the ox, when they do damage, not all the damage is visible, but it still does a tremendous amount of damage. So too, over here, the worms, even though they're not completely visible, or the damage is not completely visible, internally, they're doing a lot of damage. Rav Yosef Amar, Beta Mitvoyotiv. A house that is occupied or utilized has the proper maintenance that is done to it. Because when someone lives there, they see things that break or things that are falling apart. And therefore, they provide or they do the proper maintenance and upkeep of the house. When there's nobody living there, nobody knows that there's a pipe leaking. Nobody knows that there's a hole in the roof. So these types of things don't get fixed when there's nobody living there. My binayu, what's the nafkamina between these two shitot? Ika binayu, dekamishtamish be bitzive bitivna. Nafkamina is if you use it for wood or straw. So if you use it as storage, it seems that the balabayit, the owner of the house, was using it for storage. So as far as the shedim are concerned, they're going to be chased out. They're not going to be there because there is somebody utilizing the place. It's not desolate. It's not completely empty. There are people going in and out, not all the time, but sometimes they're going in and out. That's enough to keep the shadim out of this place. Maybe according to the Rav Haigon, that's enough to keep the woodworms away because of the fact that it's being used or utilized. On the other hand, from the perspective of maintenance, this is an infrequent use, which is that you're storing things there. You go in there every once in a while. You're not there on a regular basis or continuous basis. And therefore, the proper maintenance would not be kept in that case. So that's a nafkamina between these two versions. Therefore, if someone would squat in the woodshed or in the thrust storage area, so in those cases, according to Rav Yosef, that would be something that's okay because you're actually improving the situation because now the proper maintenance would be kept. According to Rav Huna Marav or Rav Skora, because the shading weren't there, you're not adding anything. So this goes back to the fundamental question before, which is how can you ever say zenene v'zelo chaser? Which is in these cases when you say the guy is squatting in there and he's benefiting, what's the zelo chaser? Zelo chaser means, okay, he's not losing out on rent that he would have gotten otherwise. But he still has wear and tear on his property. So some of the Rishonim, like the Rashba says over here, that this is the answer to that problem. That if you want to say that there's wear and tear on the house, there's an offsetting factor over here, which is you are benefiting the owner. And that's what he says over here. There's wear and tear on the house. Ella sharevach she medilimota mashia ola keneged ozeh. So that the fact that it's lived in now has a beneficial aspect to the owner, and that's the offset to the wear and tear. So the zelo chaser now literally becomes the rental income is the only foregone aspect. And if he wasn't going to rent it anyway, so then he hasn't foregone any income. As far as the wear and tear, he's getting an offsetting benefit, so that's a net zero. And so the zenene is from squatting, but the zelo chaser is really low chaser because of that. You're right. You're fair. You could have to assess whether is the value on either side. Mario's assuming, based on the Rashba, that that's an offsetting value, and therefore it's really low chaser. Right, so the way that the Rashba phrases it, it's a revach shematzilinota. It's like saves the house, which makes it sound like the benefit might even be greater than the wear and tear on the house. That's where the Rashba learns it. The Rosh, on the other hand, says, Maiti makro asmachto v'sa'ad l'dvarov. Which is that, until now, we've had the psak halacha, which is part of the problem, or the question that's driving the Rishonim over here is, didn't we already paskin? We had a series of piskei halacha that Rav Huna and Rav all say, zenene v'zelo chaser, patur, ein tzarich la'alot lo schar. What do I need this additional information over here? So the way the Rosh learns it, unlike the Rashba who says it's solving a problem, the Rosh simply says, the pasuk, or this, is just an added proof to the fact that, well, you're patur, or what the reasoning is behind this. There are other Rishonim who say, the reason that you need these psukim or these reasons is because when you have zenenev is a lo chaser, that doesn't permit you to go in there and live there. Just because you're patur for making the payment doesn't mean you have a right to go in and squat in someone else's property. It means that if you did it, bidyavad, then you don't have to pay for the rental income when you squatted there. But doesn't mean that you have a right to go squat in your friend's property just because you won't have to pay the rent in the end. So what these items do is make it even maybe possibly okay l'chatchila, which is not only is the squatting result in a tour that you don't have to let those schar, right? You're doing him a favor. You're house sitting for him. You're making it better for the owner, and therefore it might grant you a right l'chatchila to go in there because of the benefit that you are providing to the owner. It comes up sometimes, for instance, when somebody's away and their driveway is empty. There are no cars there. So a person comes along and says, you know what, if I park my car in their driveway, then it'll look like the house is lived in, it'll be a benefit for them. So here again, it's a zenene v'zelo chaser. The guy who parks there is getting a benefit. The person who's out or gone, lo chaser, because they want to park there, they're not renting out their driveway. But nevertheless, are you really allowed to go in without permission to their property? Assuming that there is zenene v'zelo chaser here, then do you really have a right to go in there? Even if though that is true, the answer might be because you are providing the benefit, that the house looks lived in, and you're stopping then possibly a theft from happening or making people think that the house is not occupied, that in itself might give you the right to park there, even though you don't have direct permission to park there. So that would be similar to what some of these Rishonim are saying here, that this is a way to trigger a lechatchila rather than simply a bidiavad. All right, so now we have another case. How gavra debana apadna akil kolata deyatme. There was this individual who took advantage of some garbage heap or garbage dump of the Yatomim. The Yatomim had property that was being used or utilized as a garbage dump or wasteland, whatever it was that was happening with this land. He decides that he wants to develop the land. He puts up a house over there. Basically, he takes the meadowlands and he develops it. Agve Rav Nachman apadne mine. Rav Nachman confiscated the house from him. Why did Rav Nachman confiscate the house from him? Lema kasava Rav Nachman. Remember, Rav Nachman's a dayan. So what happens here is extremely important, because most times when Rav Nachman gives a psak halacha, the halacha is like him, bedine, because he is a dayan, a very significant dayan. He was a son-in-law of the Reish Galuta as well. So he carries significant weight in these matters. So Rav Nachman just paskin to confiscate the house. Sounds like Rav Nachman believes that Darba Chatzer V'Gabriel Shlomi Dato Tzarech Lo Skar. Sounds like the reason he confiscated the house is because he wasn't paying the rental income to the Yatomim. And that's because it's a case here of Zenene. He developed an area that was otherwise wasteland. And so what was the loss to the Yatomim? So Zenene, Zelo Chaser, and yet he's confiscating the house because he's not paying for it. Haomi Kara Karminai Havudari Be. So Rashi brings two interpretations. He says originally there were Karmanai that lived there. Rashi brings one interpretation that's Shemuma. It's the name of a people. So it's a group or a sect, whatever it is, that lives there. Or he says that the Kadmonim, Karmonai, it is not the Lashon of Karmonai, but rather Kadmonai. The earlier people used to live there, or there was some sort of relationship by which the Yatomim were garnering a minimum amount of rent off of this property. So once he put his house over there, they lost out on that minimal rent that they were collecting. So then he says, and these individuals who either lived there forever or had some sort of a long-standing agreement or lease agreement with the Yatomim were paying them some minimal amount of rent over this property. So you can't claim it zenene v'zeh lo chaser. It is zenene v'zeh chaser. They're going to lose that rental income now. Amalei zil paisinu liatme. He says, go reconcile with the Yatomim. Go pay them. All he had to do really was seemingly match the rental income that the other people were giving them, and the Yatomim would have agreed to it. But he doesn't do that. V'lo ashkach. He didn't bother, or he didn't listen to Rav Nachman. Agvei Rav Nachman abad neminei. That's why Rav Nachman confiscated the house from him. Here the Balei HaTosafot mentioned what we said in the name of the Rashbo yesterday, which is that there is no equation of equality here between the loss incurred by the Yatomim and the benefit that is garnered by this individual lives there, which is that the Yatomim lost a very small amount of rent. Now, Rav Nachman is insisting he pays full rent, and that's why he confiscated the house, because he's going to give them the full value of the rental now, not just that minimum amount. And that's what the Rashba said yesterday. The Balei Tosafot said explicitly over here. Once you have a loss over there, as long as there is a loss, doesn't matter the size of the loss, then we demand that you pay the full benefit that you're getting. So even though the loss to the Yatomim was small and the benefit he's getting is much larger, at that point we're going to demand that he pays the full benefit. Because once you can connect between the part that hana and the loss, that already makes it into nezek. And once it's nezek, you got to pay for the full value of what you're garnering, whatever the hana is that you are getting. The Rashba over here discusses what Shaul raised, which is, do the Yatomim have to pay back the owner here for his outlays or his investment in the house? I mean, that he didn't just simply live there. He built a house on the property. That building of the house on the property enhanced the value, or they can collect now much larger rent on the property. So do they have to pay him? And that's the rule. The rule is if you go into someone's field and make improvements on the field, the individual has to reimburse you for the lesser of yitziotav or shevach, for the lesser of your outlays or the improvement that they did to the field. Because in the end, you have that resultant benefit. So we're not going to pay you for, if your benefit is huge versus the investment, we're not going to obligate you to pay more than the investment because you didn't do it. You didn't ask for it to be done. So you can reimburse the guy for his investment. Or if the benefit is less than the investment, we're not going to make you pay for the investment if it wasn't worth what he invested in it. So then you pay the shevach, the improvement in the property. So the question here is, do the Yatomim have to reimburse him for that because he did improve the property for them? Or can they simply say, we have no interest. We would have kept on going the other way. Now we have a big headache with this house and we have to deal with it. We were happy with the little rent and little trouble. Or they could have argued that they didn't want a house over there. They wanted open space. Whatever the reason being, they might be able to argue that they don't have to compensate him. And therefore, they don't have to pay him at all for the tziotav, for the investment over here. The Rashba deals with that, tries to figure out, goes back and forth as to whether they do have to reimburse him for the house that he built. So now we're going back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says over here, with regards to Rishut Rabim and Sidei Rishut Rabim, it says that Achla Mitocha Rechava, if he eats out of the middle of the road, Mishalemet Mashenenit, then he has to pay what he got benefit from. This is your classic case of Shein Rishut Rabim. Shein Rishut Rabim is Patur, meaning Patur mean Nezek, but Chayav in paying the Hana'a that the Behemoth garnered. Mitzidei Rechava, other than if he eats off the side of the road, Mishalemet Mashe Zika, then you pay the damage that you did. So now on that, we have the statement of the Gemara. Amarav, Rav says over here, Umechazeret. It's a case where he turns his head. Meaning that he did something which seemingly was unusual behavior. So if he's walking down the middle of the Rishut Rabim and he eats, that's considered to be normal behavior, and that normal behavior, therefore, is patur b'shut rabim from the nezek cause. Simply, you pay mashineni. Now then, b'machzeret, Rav says, when he turns his head to eat on the side, then that's why he's chayav over there, because even though he's standing in the reshut rabim, the fact that he turned to eat from the side of the road, that's what makes you obligated. Now, why you're obligated when you turn your head to the side of the road is actually Astira and Rashi himself. Rashi over here seems to say, Roshami Rechava Litzidasho Rechava, Vachalap Herot, Tani Matitin, Mishalemet Mashi Yizika, Avalet the Kula Kaimib Rechava. So Rashi seems to indicate over here that the reason being is that because you turn to the side and ate from the Tzidei Rechava, that's the equivalent of eating me, Rishuta Nizak. Since you're like not in eating out of the Rishuta Rabim, rather Rishuta Nizak. Therefore, you are Chayav for that. And patur only when the Rishut Rabim. Also, if you continue to walk straight, and he ate from the side of the Rishut Rabim, for whatever reason that he could do that without having to turn his head, then that would also be patur according to Rashi. The other hand, Rashi on the Mishnah says that the reason that that is, you pay mashnenit, but you there, you pay mitzidu chom mishalem mashachizika, kedin terem kam, tam, chatsi nezek, umaad nezek shalem. Rashi says the reason you're chayav in Sidei Rishut Rabim is not because Shein Rishut Rabim is Patur. Shein Vitzidei Rechava is Chayav. It's because you change from Shein to Karen. When he turns his head while he's walking to eat on the Tzidei Rishut Rabim, that's unusual behavior. That unusual behavior makes it no longer Shein, but Karen and your Chayav, Chatzi Nezek. So Rashi on the Mishnah claims that when Shechazika, that what you pay when you eat from the Tzidei Rishut Rabim is Chatzi Nezek. Whereas Rashi over here suggests that when you eat from the Tzidei Rishut Rabim, your Chayav, the Gamre, it's a full-fledged Shein, Shalob Yishut Rabim, and that's why you're Chayav. The Balei HaTosafot note this difference in the Rashi, and they reject the Rashi in the Mishnah and say, Kasher LePerusho, because he says that we saw before that it's normal for animals to eat from places that there is food. Doesn't matter if they jump up on a barrel, doesn't matter if they do all sorts of acrobatics to get to the food, that's still considered to be normal behavior when there is food to be gotten over there. So over here too, where they turn their head to eat from the Tzidei Rishut Rabim, that's normal behavior. There's food over there, of course he's going to turn his head and stick it in there and eat it. So that's why they don't like this being Karen. And also the subsequent Gemara that we're going to read here seems to indicate that there is a Ptur Rishut Rabim, or Chiyuv Bishut Rabim, and it revolves around that, not Karen. It says, but therefore, near the reed, Tzidei Rechava Chashivei Chatzir HaNizak. This is what you were asking. The reed says, and that's seemingly what the Rashi is saying over here as well, is that Tzidei Rishut Rabim have the status of Rishut HaNizak, because to kol echad yesh lo Rishut Laniach Perutav Keneged Petach Beito B'Tzidei Rechava. There is a social agreement contract that people are allowed to put their fruits or their merchandise, produce, outside of the door to their house, the door to their chatzer. If you drive down 60 in the Gush, you can see that farmers that are sitting along the road, They bring their produce or their merchandise to the side of the road in order to sell it. So that'd be a similar idea over here, which is that you would expect that people who are living there will bring out their produce or their merchandise to sell at the side of the road. And therefore, the tzidei rechava is as if there's a permitted space in which you can display your payrot. And that's why the bala behema, when his animal eats from there, is chayav, because he put it there with permission. If he put it there with permission, that's chazera nizak, not reshut rabim. Shmuel amar, afilo mechazeret nami patur. Shmuel says, even if it turns its head, it is still patur. I mean, it doesn't matter that as long as the body of the animal is in the reshut rabim, you can have expectations that this animal is going to eat from whatever is in the reshut rabim or whatever is on the side of the reshut rabim, he's going to eat it. Where's the case where Shmuel says you are chayav for nezek? Our Mishnah says that by tzidei reshut rabim you are chayav. Kagon de shavkata l'rachva v'az l'vakama v'tzidei rechava. It's a case where he left the main thoroughfare and went into the tzidei reshut harabim. And he went over to the side of the reshut harabim and there he ate. So that's unusual behavior because the animal doesn't normally put himself, or does not usually traverse the Reshut Rabim in the Tzidei Reshut Rabim. If he's in the Reshut Rabim, that's fine. He has permission to be there. Permission to be there means both permission to be there if he does any damage in the Reshut Rabim, but also an expectation that if he has permission to be there, he can also, whatever happens on the Tzidei Reshut Rabim is also fine. Once the animal is already in the Tzidei Reshut Rabim, that's already problematic because, or since people have permission to put their wares out on the Tzidei Reshut HaRabim, then when the shore is walking over there, he's the one who's problematic, because we assume that the other individuals have the right to place their payrot over there. We're going to see later on, Tosafot also notes, similar to in our day where we have a sidewalk or a curb, where the Reshut HaRabim is divided into an area which is where cars go, and the Tzidei Reshut HaRabim where pedestrians go. So similarly over here, it seems like there, Tzidei Rechava also had some sort of elevation, was a different height than the main part of the Reshut Rabim. So for the animal to step up and go into that area would have been a behavior that would be, make him chayav because he doesn't have the permission there. It'd make it into Chatzera Nizak, because it's as if really you left the Reshut Rabim and moved into the Chatzera Nizak. Now, some people do not have their qualifications, this machlok between Rav and Shmuel, on a Mishnah, but rather as an independent statement. Machzeret, in a case where an animal turns its head. Rav amar chayevet, u'shmol amar p'tura. Rav says you're chayev in that case. Shmuel says you're p'tura. U'shmol, mishlom et mashizika, echa mishkakala de mechayva. Where's the case where you figure out where you are chayev or you're obligated to pay? You go on the shavka de rechava, v'az l'vakama b'tzidei rechava. So that he went from the main thoroughfare onto the sidewalk, onto the tzidei reshut rabim. In that case, you would be responsible for the behavior. You'd be responsible for that which happens. Meitiv Rav Nachman b'Yitzchak. Remember it says, Mipetach Chanut, the next part of the Mishnah says, that if he eats out of the doorway, or the entranceway of the store, Mishalemet Mashinenit, you pay for what benefit he got. I mean, you don't pay for the Ezek. Heichei Mishkachala. What is the case over there? Shita B'machazeret. Of course, the case is where the animal stuck its head into that area and ate it. So this is a problem for Rav. Rav says, B'machazeret, you are Chayav. All of a sudden over here, the next line of the Mishnah says if he sticks his head into the area in front of the chanut, then he is patur. But the only way he's sticking his head into the area in front of the chanut is if he turns his head while he's going through the Reshut HaRabim. Bikamar, mashinenit. Mashinenit din, mashizikalo. That's against Rav's position. Here you'd only have to pay for mashinenit, not mashizika. Hu motiv la, v'hu mefarik la. He posed the question, and now he reconciles or resolves the issue. Tekaimo bekeren zavit. It was at a corner. The way Rashi explains it, you can see the picture in Rashi. You have a mavui katan going into a larger mavui. If the animal is walking from the mavui gadol into the mavui katan, and the storekeeper has his store on that corner, then when his fruits or his merchandise are sitting outside of his store on the corner, the animal walking from the larger mavui into the smaller mavui doesn't have to turn its head. It walks straight in and eats the payrot without having to make any changes in its head. So because of that, that's why Rav would agree in that case, you are patur for Masha Hezika, because he didn't do anything, according to Rashi, unusual by turning its head to make it into Karen. Or, according to the way that Rashi over here and the other Rishonim learned, he didn't make it into Reshuta Nizak because of the nature of the location, it's not Rishut HaNizak, because it's still in a trajectory for an animal walking straight, they would bump right into this and wouldn't have to make any effort to turn in order to get there. That's the way Rashi learns. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot here say that Keren Zavit is a case where you have a Mavoi that literally turns. You have a Mavoi that has an angle or some sort of turn in it, and the store is sitting on that turn. So if the store sits on the turn within the Mavoi, the animals that are coming before they make the turn are face on with the fruits, and therefore they don't have to be Machzeret, they don't have to turn their head. That's why Tosafot explains what it means here that Bekeren Zavit. But in either instance, what we're doing is saying that the fruits now don't require Machzeret, a turning of the head, and that's why you're going to be Patur as if it was in the Rishut HaRabim. Ike de Amre, we have another lashon here completely, which is Machazeret kuli ama lo plige de chayevet. By Machazeret, everybody agrees to Rav's position that we saw before, that you are a chayav. Whether according to Rashi, that means chatzi nezek for Karen, or according to Rashi here, and the other Rishonim, that means that you're chayav because it's Rishut HaNizak, because you have permission to put the payroll over there. Ki plige, where do they argue, is mekatze makom mirshuto the Rishut HaRabim. It's a case where he gives up of some of his property to the Rishut HaRabim. So he has a property line. Instead of building a wall at the end of his property line, he backs the wall up off the Rishut HaRabim in order to leave space that is really his property. And since it's his property, he wants to utilize it for his purposes, but he also in some sense gives it or gives a right to the people of Rishut HaRabim to utilize it as well. And so now Rashi explains what the case is over here is Mekatze Makom, Shekaneis Letoch Shelo, he brought the wall into his property. Bana veiniach mikarkol Rishut HaRabim. And he left over the property as basically an easement or a shetach for the Rishut HaRabim. Tosafot over here makes it clear that it can't be that he gifted it to the Rishut HaRabim, because if he was mafkirit and gave it over to the Rishut HaRabim totally, then it would have a din like Rishut HaRabim and there'd be nothing to discuss over here. So it has to be that he retained some sort of ownership rights. The way that Tosafot explains it is that he maintained the right to put out his merchandise and to display his payroll on his farm stand over there. But when his fruits are not there, when his items aren't there, he let the Rishut HaRabim to traverse that area. So he maintains a certain semblance of ownership over the area, but the Rishut HaRabim, or the people in the public, have a right to walk through there or go through there. So now, based on that, the Gemara suggests over here that that will equate to a case, V'achitmar. Then this is the way that you would say there, Machloket. Amarav, lo shanu elam machzeret. The only time you are chayav is when he turns. Aval mekatze makom nirshuto, Rishut HaRabim, tura. On the other hand, if you give up some of your space to the Rishut HaRabim, over there you would be patur if the animal ate from there. Shmuel amar, afilu mekatze makom nirshuto, Rishut HaRabim, chayevet. On the other hand, Shmuel believes that even if he gives up of his property to Rishut HaRabim, you'd still be a chayevet similar to mechazeret.
And they are simply arguing about whether this property, which is now adjacent to the Rishut HaRabim, and you built your wall further back in it, does that property have a din of Rishut HaNizak, and therefore you'd be chayav for Shein and Regel? Or does it have a status of the Rishut HaRabim? Because it's being utilized by the Bnei Rishut HaRabim, and he can expect that animals are going to come there and eat whatever he puts down there. Therefore, the Bala Behemah is patur for any damage that's done to the fruits. Or do we look at it as Rishut HaNizak, and the Bala Behemah is going to be responsible for any damage that's done there? And as Tosfot points out, this would be different than Machazeret, where everybody agrees you're Chayav, because of the difference of the levels of these areas. When it comes to the Tzidei Arechava, that's like the sidewalk. It's elevated, and therefore the animal, if it turns its head to eat in there or does something in there, that area is already deemed or considered to be Rishut HaNizak. On the other hand, here where he donates or gives of his property to the Rishut HaRabim, it's on the same level of the Rishut HaRabim, and there's no distinction between the properties to indicate that it should not be the Rishut HaNizak over here, and that's why you might believe, like Shmuel, you could be patur over here despite the fact that you're chayav by Machazeret.
So now, lema bebor bishuto kamiflige. Let us assume here that they're arguing about when you have a boar in your own rishut. The way that Rashi describes this, and then based on that we'll explain what just happened over here. Rashi explains over here that if a person has property in which he dug a ditch, it's his property, he dug a ditch, a cistern, whatever it is that he dug into his property,
It's his own property, he can do as he pleases. But then after he dug his property out, he's mafkir the property. Your classic case of bor is a case where you walk out into the Reshut Rabim and you dig a hole or you open up a manhole in the middle of the Reshut Rabim. There, it's not your property and you have no permission to do it and you are chayav. The case that we're speaking about here is when you dug the pit and you put it there, you had the right to do it. It was your property. After the fact, you're mafkir the property. So now you have something a little different than Reshut Rabim or bor Reshut Rabim. You have a bor Reshut Rabim, but over here the bor is still owned by you. You have real ownership over the bor. So there's a machloket later on in the Gemara on Daf Mem Tedem Ud Bet between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel as to whether an individual is chayav in that case for the damage that the bor does. So now the way Rashi learns this is that the Gemara here is drawing an equation between the case of bor and the case over here. And the outcomes are just the opposite, which is that Rav over here says you are patur for the eating of the peirot. The reason you're patur for the eating of the peirot is because in the case of a bor, if a person is mafkir the property after he dug the bor in it, the bal habor would be responsible for any damage that happens over there. The bal habor now is on the hook for anything that happens to the animals. So what Rob is saying is, well, you're on hook for any damage that's done. So if that's the case, when the guy puts his peirot into this property, it's the equivalent of digging a bor, a private bor, in the Reshut Rabim. This guy who's putting his peirot out there, it's as if he's putting his own private bor into the Reshut Rabim. If an animal would be damaged by those peirot, he'd be responsible for that damage because it's a bor yachid, Reshut Rabim. So therefore, it's a private-owned bor in the Reshut Rabim, and according to this, you would be chayav, Rav says. Therefore, if the animal eats the peirot, he doesn't have to pay for them. And that's based on a principle that we have later on in the Gemara, on Daf Lamed, which is called a mekalkalim b'Reshut Rabim. Anything that he does damage, or puts something that is reckless and ruinous out in the Reshut Rabim, if it does damage, he's responsible for the damage done. If someone else does damage to it, zachu. It's the, they got it. It's their benefit. I mean that we, in a sense, are mafkir, or disown him from his property to, for the benefit of others, which is that if it does damage, we'll make him responsible for the damage. If it's eaten or taken away, then you don't have to compensate him for that. So therefore, Rav believes that a bor of the yachid that is in the Reshut Rabim, in that case, you would be chayav. Since in that case you'd be chayav, when the animal eats the peirot, you are a patur. And Shmuel believes just the opposite. Shmuel says that when it comes to bor, you are a patur in that case. It was your private property when you put the bor in there. After you're mafkir it, the Reshut Rabim gets whatever you gave them. If you gave them an area with a bor in it, that's what they get, and you're not responsible for that. Since you're not responsible for that as a bor, when an animal comes and eats it, then you're chayav for eating of the peirot, because that's not called mekalkel Reshut Rabim. Since it's not called Mekalkel Reshut Rabim, we don't disown him from the property. If the animal comes and eats it, you would be chayav. So it'll turn out that Rav and Shmuel's positions here are the opposite of their positions over there, or what they would have thought over there. So that's how Rashi explains this machloket. And Tosafot takes issue with this on a number of levels as to this explanation of Rashi. And therefore, Tosafot brings an alternate explanation as to the reasoning behind Rav and Shmuel, how close you brought the item to the Reshut Rabim, how proximate it is to the Reshut Rabim. Then Adam yachol litzamtzem kol kach shover b'Reshut Rabim shlo yikanez b'Reshut Acherim fikach lo yalo lekarev boro mamash l'Reshut Rabim. So why are you chayav by the case of bor? The reason you're chayav by the case of bor is it's too close to the Reshut Rabim. You put your bor in a place where other people are just not going to be able to watch it out for it, be careful for it. Ba'anami p'tura. So too over here, you're patur patur from the eating of the peirot. He put his fruits too close to the Reshut Rabim. Because they can't be so exact about where the property line is and not to go there, not to go into that area. And Shmuel is mechayev, mishum shlo yalo lekarei peirotav samoch l'Reshut Rabim, ein liftor, shechol balei peirot lismoch, v'gam bala bor yechol lismoch. Because Shmuel believes that it was your property. If it's your property, you can put them anywhere you want in that area that was your property. So the machloket here, according to the Balei Tosafot, is by bor, and similarly over here by peirot. is a machloket about your rights to use that area. Rav believes you have rights to use that area, as long as you don't impinge on the Rishut HaRabim or the parties of the Rishut HaRabim. If you get too close to the Rishut HaRabim, even though the area that you designated or pulled your wall back in is your private area, nevertheless, if you put it right up against the Rishut HaRabim, it's going to be very clear that something's going to happen. The reason we put walls between the Rishut HaRabim and the private property is because of that problem. People bump up against the walls. People are not careful enough to say, this is exactly the line where I'm not going to cross. So in a case where there's no wall, because you pulled your wall back and made it an area that's quote-unquote an extension of the Rishut HaRabim, if you have your private bor or peirot that are sitting there, you can't expect people to get the exact property line. So Rav says you got to pull it back. If you don't pull it back, then if it's a bor, you're chayav for the damage it does. If it's peirot, if someone does damage to the peirot, they're not going to be responsible because you're too close to the Rishut HaRabim. Then Shmuel says, it's your private property. You have a right to use it all the way up to the property line. And therefore, if something happens over on that property line, if it's a bor, you're patur. They got to stay in the Rishut HaRabim, not in your property. If it's peirot, they can't eat from your property where they be Rishut HaNizak. And that's the way Tosafot explains the machloket. The reason he doesn't like Rashi is because what ends up happening in Rashi is that the way that you look at the bor, I mean, dine bor, impact on dine shein, which is that if you are patur for the bor, then we're saying that you are chayav for the peirot. Because whatever the din is by bor, we're going to say the opposite by the peirot, or that is your responsibility towards the owner of the bor. So because of Rashi's interpretation says, okay, here's the din by bor, therefore this will be the din by shein. So you're almost jumping tracks and saying whatever is true by bor, the opposite is true by shein. Who says one influences the other? Who says that they have to do with each other? The Baal and Tosafot are unwilling to accept it, and therefore they want to come up with a reason that is shared by both, but ends up with a different result. Which is, Tosafot says, the question here is, can you put your items close to the Rishut HaRabim or not? Now, that'll have different results. When you're putting something that's a takala there, like a boar, you're going to be responsible for damage. If you put peirot there where animals can eat them, the parties that eat them are not going to be responsible because you did something wrong by putting them too close. But the reasoning behind them is the same. It has to do with proximity to Rishut HaRabim. And that's the question that we are dealing with. So that's how Tosafot explains it vis-a-vis Rashi, who says that it's connected to the din of bor, therefore influences the din of shein. Now, in a broad sense, the machloket here between Rav and Shmuel might actually relate to why you think shein and regel is patur b'rishut HaRabim. We've seen until now this machloket, whether it's kir or chayu, it's just this normal behavior of the animal, expected animal behavior, or is it gzeirat ha-ketubah b'yer b'shdei acher? And therefore here you could argue that Rav is subscribing to that position by which it is all about orchayu. What is normal behavior? What can you expect from the animals? So therefore, what does Rav say? Rav says when it's walking down the middle of the Rishut HaRabim, patur, because that's normal. Turning his head to the side of the Rishut HaRabim to eat, not normal behavior. Therefore, you're not patur b'Rishut HaRabim. So that's because it's just not the normal, or it wouldn't be the expected behavior of the animal. And therefore, you're not patur, even though it is Rishut HaRabim. You're not patur because it's not kior chayu. That's not normal behavior. And in the case over here, by mikatze makom rishuto, the Rishut HaRabim, when he gives up some of his property to the Rishut HaRabim, over here, there you are patur because it's then normal for the animals to access or go into that area. And that's where he robs shita throughout. Shmuel, on the other hand, subscribes to the gzeirat ha-ketuv. The only question here is it ubir b'shdei acher or not? So he says, listen, if the animal's standing in Rishut HaRabim, you can't call it ubir b'shdei acher, even if he turns his head to eat from there. That's not called ubir b'shdei acher, and therefore you're patur. As long as the animal's in the Rishut HaRabim, you are patur. The animal goes onto the sidewalk. The animal goes into the area where people have permission to put their peirot. That's the acher. That's already Rishut HaNizak. And in our case over here, b'makatzeh b'mekomo, the Rishut HaRabim, when he gives up some of his property to the Rishut HaRabim, that again is ubir b'shdei acher. Because that's not Rishut HaRabim. Yes, you have permission to go in there. He's granted you certain permissions, but it's still called Tzidei Rishut HaRabim. And since it's Tzidei Rishut HaRabim, there you're going to be Chayav, because that is, it's Bebi or B'shdei Acher. That belongs to the Nizak, or the Peirot belongs to the Nizak, and therefore you're going to be Chayav if the animal eats from that area. So in that way, you could probably explain the Machloket Rav and Shmuel throughout here, and depending on what you think the tour of Shein and Regel is, Birshut HaRabim. Right now, the Gemara says, Amar lecha Rav. Rav says, La'olam eim lecha ba'alma. I can tell you in general, bor birshuto patur.
If the bor is done in his own property, you are patur. B'shani halchos, so then why are you chayav the perot over here? Damalav love kokuminach. Mekavet lo the perot chal the shuter abim. Mekavet lo the torai. You shouldn't have put your perot so close to the shuter abim. Mean that over here he believes that the Torah did not obligate you when you put in your bor as your private bor. Over here the problem is that you stuck your perot in harm's way. And says you stuck your perot in harm's way, then you're patur. You're the cause of the problem here. You put your perot so close to the Rishut Rabim, that's what caused my animal to eat it, and then you can't obligate my animal, or you can't obligate me for my animal's eating of the fruits when you are the problem here by putting your perot just too close to the Rishut Rabim. Shmuel Amar, Be'alma, Bor Bishuto is Chayav. That normally Bor Bishuto is Chayav. The Bishlam of Bor, Ikala Meimer Lava Date. Because by the case of boar, the owner of the animal can say, I couldn't be careful because of a boar. You don't see it. You don't see the pothole coming up. You don't see that ditch coming up in the road. And I couldn't be careful for it. Ela peirot, mika lemeimer lavadate. Hakazilu. How can he say, oh, I didn't notice the peirot there. I didn't notice steer my animal away. It's something that's obvious and out in the open. And therefore, it's different case. So for Rashi over here, what we've done is detached the din of boar from the din of shame. The din of boar could be totally independent of the din of shame. In the case of din of boar, according to Rav, you could be chayav, you could be patur. The reason you're chayav by shame is just because you brought your fruits too close to the reshuta rabim, and that's what's causing the obligation of here. For Shmuel again, the boar could be chayav or patur. The reason that you are chayav over here is because peirots are something obvious and visible where the Baal HaShor should have taken more care not to have the animal go and eat it because he can see that there are fruits over there. And that's why we make him responsible. According to the Baal HaTosafot, we're separating between the dinim and explaining why by one or not by the other there'll be a reason to be somech. I mean, according to Shmuel, there's a reason why when you put your boar too close to the Rishut Rabim, you're going to be chayav is because people don't notice the boar. Peirot, people do notice, and therefore even if you put it adjacent to the Rishut Rabim, you're not going to be patur for that. You'll be chayav if the animal eats it. And for Rav, it's saying that by fruits, you're chayav because we worry about you placing it proximate to the Rishut Rabim. By a boar, we don't want to make you chayav, even though you put it proximate to the Rishut Rabim, because it's your property or you have a right to put your boar over there. Over there, we're not saying that he attracted the animal to come there. It's not like he incented the animal to come there. By the fruits, already, it's something that we know causes animals to come. You should pull it back because you know that type of problem is going to arise. So that's the way either the Baal HaTosafot or Rashi see now. Rashi says the din of boar and din of shein are totally separate. Or the way that Tosafot says this idea of too close or not adjacent to the Rishut Rabim can be applied differently to boar than it is applied to shein. And you'll come up with different answers. So now Gemara says, Lema mechazeret tanayehi. Let us say this din of mechazeret is actually a machloket tanaim. The Tanya. Achla mitoch harichava. He eats out of the middle of the road. Mishalemet mashenen eat. Then you pay what you benefit from. Mitzide rechava. If you eat it from the side. Mishalemet mashenzika. You pay for damage. This is exactly like our Mishnah. Divi Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda. Stam Mishnah's Rabbi Meir. It would make sense that Rabbi Meir's statement here equates or is similar to our Mishnah. Rabbi Yosef of Elazar omrim. Ein darka lechol el lalich. It's not the way of the animal to eat, but rather to be mobile and to move. So now, Rabbi Yossi, Hainu Tanakama. Rabbi Yossi Shita is exactly like the Tanakama. Now, the way that the Gemara is saying it now over here is that he's talking about Tzidei Rishut Rabim. And in the Tzidei Rishut Rabim, he's saying, Ein darka lechol el halech. It's not the normal behavior of the animal to eat, but rather to walk. So he seemingly is saying the same thing as Rabbi Meir, which is, it's normal behavior to walk to be in the Rishut Rabim. It's not normal behavior to stop or eat from the Tzidei Rishut Rabim. So Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakama seem to be saying the exact same thing. So what's the difference between them? Ela mechazeret ika benayu. The difference between them is if the animal turns its head to eat. Tanakama savar mechazeret nami mishalem mashenenit. When he turns his head, he still plays mashenenit because he's out in the Rishut Rabim. It's normal behavior. He turns his head to eat. That's normal behavior. If he goes into the Tzidei Rishut Rabim, that he'd be patur. Rabbi Yossi Savar Mishalemet Mishalizika. If he turns his head, that's not normal behavior. It's normal for an animal to walk. It's not normal for an animal to stand and eat. It says, lo. The Kuleyama Mechazeret Ikarav Ikishmuel. Mechazeret doesn't matter. We can pass him like Rabbi, we can pass him like Shmuel. V'hocha v'bir b'steacher kamitlege. They're arguing about what's the meaning of the pasuk when it says b'ir b'steacher. Rabbi Meir believes that Bir Bistei Acher means you're exempted when you're in the Bishut Rabim, but not in the Bistei Acher. Umar Savar Bir Bistei Acher Velo Birshuta Mazik, and not in the area of the animal or the owner of the animal's property. So now what Rashi explains to us over here is that Rabbi Yossi's Shita is Bir Bistei Acher Pligi Vatoch Rechava Nami Michayev Le Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, even if you eat in the middle of the Shut Rabim, you are chayav. Because Rabbi Yossi believes, Ubir b'stei acher comes to teach you, stay acher, and not stay hamazik. Not the property of the owner of the animal. If it's not in the property of the owner of the animal, you're going to be chayav. That'll be Rishut Rabim, that will be Tzidei Rishut Rabim, that'll be Chatzera Nizak, all of those you'll be chayav for. So that's the position of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Because it's normal behavior is to walk, eating is not considered to be normal behavior. Eating is not normal behavior, you're going to be chayav because people can't expect it, or you can't demand a tour because your animal ate. That's not something you would expect your animal to do. Therefore, you're chayav in Rishut Rabim, you're chayav in Sidei Rishut Rabim, you're chayav in the Chatzer Nizak. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes that Bir B'Stei Acher is an exemption for Rishut Rabim. Bir B'Stei Acher means that the Chatzer Nizak, you're chayav, but in Rishut Rabim, you would be patur. And that's the machloket between them, is whether in Rishut Rabim you're patur or chayav. So now the Gemara says that type of interpretation seems difficult because lema percha birshuti my boy. If it's the chazera mazik, then can't the owner of the animal just say, what is your fruit doing in my property? What do you need a pasuk to teach you that you're chayav in the case where you stick your fruit into someone else's property? Of course you're chayav. Your fruit doesn't belong there. So ella de ilfa rabel shaya ikabenayu. The nafkamina between their positions is what we saw in yesterday's daf. The cases of Ilfa and Rav Hoshaya. Ilfa's case was a case where Behema Birshut Rabim Upashtat Savara Bachla Mi'al Gabei Chaverta. Case where he stuck his hand into the back of his friend and he ate from there. And Rav Hoshaya's case was a case of Behema Birshut Rabim Hachav Achla. If it's walking, it's Patur. Amdav Achla. If it stops to eat, Chayevet. Therefore, you're Chayev over there. Rav over there says Bikofetzet. Right, Rava says that the cases over there were Bekofetzet. Now, why you're Chayav in these two locations might be different, and that's what the Balei Tosafot point out. Balei Tosafot say that in the case of Rabbi Hoshaya, the reason you are Chayav is because it's Karen. The animal did something unusual. On the other hand, by the case of on the back of his friend, the reason you're Chayav over there is because it's Bishut Anizak, and it's chained Bishut Anizak. So Tosafot says that even though the reasoning behind Ilfa and Rabbi Hoshaya are different, nevertheless, the Gemara is saying that both of these are enough gemina between the position of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. That Rabbi Meir says that as long as you're in the Rishut Rabim, you're going to be patur, and you only pay mashinenit, even in the case of Ilfa, even in the case of Rabbi Hoshaya. And Rabbi Yossi comes along to say, no, ain't darkah l'shotzarel chavrata, it's not normal behavior for the animal to stick its head on its friend. It's not normal for the animal to jump from its way to go to eat, or to take a break and do something different along the way. And because of that, for Rashi, it's a lot easier. If you remember yesterday, Rashi learned Bekofetzet, in both cases meant Karen. It was an unusual behavior, it was Karen. So for Rashi, it's consistent that the case of Rabbi Hoshaya and the case of Ilfa are both because of Karen. And so what Rabbi Yossi is saying is, you're chayav in these cases because it's Mishuneh. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir is saying it's in Rishut Rabim. Rishut Rabim, you have a Ptur. There's no Mishuneh over here. It's not Mishuneh enough to be considered Karen. And it's still under the framework of Shein, and because of that, you're patur, because it's Rishut Rabim. So that would be the difference between them. Or according to the other Rishonim, like the Rashbo yesterday, who suggested both of them are because of Shein, and it's considered to be Rishut Anizak. And the machloket here is, Rabbi Meir says, it's not deemed to be Rishut Anizak or Bir B'Stei Acher. Therefore, you'd be patur in both the case of Ilfa and Rabbi Hoshaya. And for Rabbi Yossi, he would say that you're chayav in both of those instances, because it's deemed to be Rishut Anizak. And like Rashi, those Rishonim also have a consistency between the two opinions of Ilfa and Rabbi Hoshaya, unlike what the Balei Tosafot are suggesting over here. Tosafot also does point out here that when the Gemara says we're indifferent between the position of Rav and Shmuel, and the machlok between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir is different, Tosafot says it's lav dafka. It's not literally that you can hold like Rav and Shmuel, because Rabbi Yossi clearly can't hold like Shmuel. Rabbi Yossi says you're chayav in Rishut Rabim. And Shmuel clearly says you're patur in Rishut Rabim. So it's not that they can be equated in that way, but rather it simply means that in circumstances you could hold a grav or hold like shmuel. It's not saying that in every case they will match up. And he says you have to read it like this: ikarav dechashiv chatzar nizak, ikishmuel dechashiv leivishut rabim. Afagav the Rabbi Yossi ain't nafkuta. Even though there's no nafkamina to Rabbi Yossi, whatever Shmuel or Rav says could be true or not be true, even though for Rabbi Yossi it makes no difference. You're going to be chayav in both cases. Their position may have no influence on what Rabbi Yossi's position is, and that's what the Gemara meant. On the other hand, he says, l'peir shakuntris. According to Rashi's interpretation on the Mishnah that says, nechatfei, it works out much better. Ik Rav, d'chashiv le'keren, ik Shmuel, d'chashiv le'shein. If it's like Rav, who says that it's Karen, because it's Mishuneh, or Kishmuel, who says that it's Shane, and that's why you are Patur, you'd be Patur in some cases, Rabbi Yossi says, in either of those cases, you're Chayav. Because he believes that Shane B'Shut Rabim is Chayav, and he believes Karen B'Shut Rabim is Chayav. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi could fit into both of those positions, the way that Rashi explained the Mishnah. So that's actually a support for Rashi's interpretation over here, the way the Gemara formulates it. Tosafot says, despite that, I can still argue that just Ikarav Ikishmo just means that that machloket, or their positions over there, has no influence over how or what Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir say, because it's not relevant to what they say. And that's how Tosafot explains this Gemara. All right, next Mishnah. Hakelev v'agdi, have a dog or a kid, shekabtzu mirosh hagag, they jumped off a roof, shavru et hakelim, and they broke utensils down below. Shalem, nezek shalem, you pay full nezek, full damages here. Menei she'ein muadin. Because that's the normal behavior or an expected behavior of an animal, is to jump. Animals jump if you put them up on a roof. That's the way the Rambam says from the upcoming Gemara. The Rambam proves to me that it's a case where the owners put them on the roof. For the owners who took the animals and put them on the roof, you can expect that what next move by the animal is going to be to jump off the roof and come down to what's below. So when it comes down below and damages what's below, you are chayav. And this is what we'll call an extension of regel. It's an extension of regel because here they are going to act in a normal manner, in a manner that can be expected. And it's muad mitchila. So therefore, it's a subset of regel, and you're going to be chayav if it does damage to the kelim. A kelev shenatal charera, a dog that takes a burnt or charred piece of bread, Valach the Gadish, and he takes it over to a pile of grain. Achala Charera, he ate the bread or the charcoal bread. Ve'idlika Gadish, but in the interim, there was still some heat or embers left in that, and it lights the Gadish, the pile on fire. Al Charera Mishalem Nezek Shalem, for the bread itself, for the charcoal item that he ate, he's going to pay full Nezek. Gadish Mishalem Chatzi Nezek. And for the damage of the Gadish, you'll pay Chatzi Nezek. Again, the Gemara is going to go through exactly what the case is and why in one instance you're Chayav Nezek Shalem, the other you're Chatzi Nezek. Now the Gemara says, Tama de Kaptsu. The reason you're Chayav in a Mishnah is because they jumped. Had naflu, if they fell off the roof, patur, then you would not be responsible. Alma, what you see from here is Kasavar Tchilato B'Pshia V'Sofa Bonis, patur. That if something starts out as being behavior that is negligent behavior by the owner, but ends up happening to be an accident in the end, that you would be patur. Because in this case, the tchilat of b'shiyan is what I mentioned before. The Rambam says that the clear problem is that the owners took the animals up to the roof. So that's the b'shiyan. You put the animals on the roof, and what you expect from an animal on a roof is to jump. In the end, what happened to the animals, it fell off the roof. Falling off the roof is an accident. It's not intentional. And therefore, the conclusion you would have from our Mishnah is, only when they jump are you chayav. When they carry out what otherwise would have been the negligent behavior or would be precipitated by the negligent behavior, then you're chayav. If something happens that's not necessarily precipitated by the negligent behavior, similarly they fell off a roof, which is an accident, there you'd be patur, based on our Mishnah. Tanya Namiochi, if you have a braita that supports that, Hakelev Agdi Shekabtzu Mirosh Hagag, a dog or a kid that jump off the roof, the shavru et hakelim, and they damage the utensils below, mishalem nezek shalem. Naflu, if they fall off, piturim, then they are patur. That corroborates the diuk that we're making out of our Mishnah, that there's a difference between kaftsu and naflu. Hanicha lamanda amar, that works well, machloka and the gemara and baba mitsia, tchilato b'shia b'sofa bonus, patur. That in the case where you start out in a negligent behavior, but the problem or the issue in the end came out of something that was out of your control or accidental, that you're patur. Alamanda mar chayav, going to the sheet that says you are chayav in that case, ma'ika lemeimar, what are you going to do with this Mishnah and this Braita? Kigon, it's a case, the mekarve kelim legabe kotel. The kelim are right up against the wall.
If he jumps off the roof, he would not land on the kelim. So there's no longer pshia, there's no longer negligence up front, because if the animals do what you expect them to do, which is jump off the roof, they won't damage any kelim. The kelim are too close, adjacent to the wall or the roof that they're on. And therefore, when they jump, they're going to clear the kelim. It won't be a problem. Therefore, there's no negligence up front. It's all onus. And that's why you're patur in that case, because the animal, you wouldn't have expected it to fall. And it fell on kelim that wouldn't have been damaged by the fact that had it jumped off, it would have cleared those kelim. And that's why it's not even tchilat pshia. Your pshia, your negligence, wouldn't have caused any damage. It's only because of the accidental fall that damage was actually created over here. Tosfot Amir asks on the beginning of the Gemara, here the Gemara seems to indicate if you jump off and damage kelim, they would have to be far away from the wall. If you fell off and damaged kelim, those kelim would have to be proximate to the wall. The Gemara at the first makes a deal out of our Mishnah and says, Tam, the kaftsu. The reason that you're chayav in the Mishnah is because they jumped. Hanaflu, had they fallen, you would have been patur. Tosafot says, where are these kelim? Are the kelim far out or are the kelim close by? If the kelim are close by, then had it jumped, how could you be chayav? It wouldn't have hit the kelim. If you say the kelim are far out, so that had he jumped, it would have been chayav, then when it falls off, it's not damaging the kelim because there are no kelim close by. So Bali and Tosafot say, oh, it's a case where they're right in between. It's a case where they're not so adjacent to the wall, but not so far away, whereby which both jumping and falling would cause damage to the kelim. That's one answer he brings. The second answer he brings is the possibility of a long kli that extends both from adjacent to the wall to further out. And depending where he jumps or he falls, he'll damage different ends of the kli. The Tosafot, Rabbeinu Peretz, suggests that it's litzdanim tani. It's not one case. It's just giving you two separate cases. It's saying in a case where he jumped and the kelim were far out, or in a case when he fell and the kelim were close in. The Talmid of Rabbeinu Peretz suggests that there are kelim in both places. As opposed to the Rabbeinu Peretz who says it's either or, the two different cases, the Talmid of Rabbeinu Peretz say that there are kelim extending all the way from the wall out, and therefore no matter whether he jumps or he falls, you're going to run into a problem. So now, Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei Derava, Pamim Shafilu Naflu Nami Chayav. There are cases when the animal falls off the roof, you'd be responsible. It's a case where the makeh, the fence around the roof, was a weak fence. Since it was a weak fence, you can expect that it's going to fall or something's going to happen. My nihu, what's the issue there? That he should have had in mind, or he should have known that the wall was going to collapse or fall down. And then when the animal falls off, that'd be a natural result of the wall falling. If the wall falls, there's no protection on the side of the roof anymore. The animal will wander off to the side of the roof and fall off. That'd be normal behavior then, and you should have anticipated that behavior. Sof, lo nafal arche. The nafal inu. Wait a minute. In the end, the wall did not fall down, but the animal did fall down. Now you've replicated a case again of tkliato b'pshiav sofa bonus. So that's a case where you were negligent up front because you put him up on a roof where you knew the wall was weak and could fall down any second. So you're a posheya negligent. In the end, the animal fell off the roof without the wall falling. That's an onus, because it wasn't because of the wall falling that the animal fell off. The animal just fell off by itself, which would be accidental behavior. You're saying in that case, you would definitely be chayav. Why? We're back to square one, where we're in the machloket of tchilato posheya v'sof bonus. Where it says, bekotel tzar, saying about a narrow wall. You can assume that the animals will jump onto the top of the wall. That's what animals do, dogs. These kids, they like to jump. So they jump on top of the wall. But now you know that the wall up there is tzar. It's a very narrow wall. Or Rashi brings a second interpretation. It has a slope on it. It's not a flat top. So you have to anticipate the fact that the animals are going to jump onto the wall. When they jump onto the wall, the likely outcome now is that they're going to fall because it's a narrow wall or it's a sloping wall. And so therefore you're chayav for naflu over there because you were negligent in regards to naflu. According to many of the Rishonim over here, the Gemara is going back to the original assumption. It's leaving, it's saying, forget this koto ra'ua business. We're not talking about a weak wall. We're talking about a fully strong, healthy wall that's up there. Just that the nature of the wall won't allow the animals, when they jump on it, to stay up. They're likely going to fall. And that's why you're chayav in that case, because in a sense, you're posheya for putting them up there. So you could have anticipated the fact that they jump on the wall and fall off. And that's why you're going to be chayav for naflu. Tanu Rabbanan, akelev agdish dilgu mimata l'malo, when a dog or a kid jumps from down below to up above, they are patur.
Milamalo lamato. On the other hand, if they jump from above to below, chayavin. In that case, you are chayav. Now Rashi over here says that when we say they are patur, when you jump up, Rashi says they're patur from nezek shalem, but they are chayav in chatzi nezek, that of keren. Other rishonim argue that it's not chatzi nezek. When you say patur, it means patur legamre, because you wouldn't have expected that behavior at all. And not only is it not a behavior you would expect, and therefore it's mishuna, and you pay like keren and you're chayav, it's so unusual that it's considered to be anus. And since you're anus, in that case, you'd be patur legamre.
Or you could argue that because there isn't kavanato l'azik, it still stays under the rubric of shein and regel. And by shein and regel, if you have mishuneh, then you're totally patur because it's not captured by shein and regel, which by definition are normal behaviors of the animal.
All right, so now adam b'tarnagol, if it's a human being or a chicken, shadogu ben malo l'mata, whether it's from up to down, ben l'mata l'malo is down to up, chayavin. In that case, you are chayav. The difference being that the normal behavior of an individual or the normal behavior of a chicken is to jump up or jump down. Since that's normal behavior, you're going to be chayav no matter how the damage was caused, whether it's when they're jumping up or they're jumping down. On the other hand, by kelev and gedi, they have a tendency to jump down. They don't have a tendency to jump up. So therefore, by the jumping up, they'll either be patur legamre or at least patur from chatzi nezek in that case. That's the difference. Now, Tosfot over here says, Bishlama by the tarnagol, by the chicken, that's a chiddush. Then you tell me that it jumps up and down, and you're chayav in both instances. For Adam, that you're chayav, Adam mu'ad li'olam. So what's the chiddush here in the Braita that Adam is chayav? So Tosfot comes up with two possibilities as to what the chiddush here is in this Braita. Either the fact that in the ratio of the Mishnah, and this goes against Rashi's pshat, but in the ratio of the Mishnah, we saw that when you jumped from down to up, you were patur because that you were completely, because it was such a strange happening or strange behavior of the animal, it's going to be anus. And then you would think maybe by the Adam, the same thing would apply. Meaning that even though Adam is mu'ad li'olam, when he's a complete anus, he is patur. So over here, if you're calling the behavior of the kid and the kelev as anus, maybe Adam would be patur. That's what it comes along to tell you, that Adam is behavior to jump up and down. Both of those are considered normal enough behavior that it's not an anus and you are chayav. That's one way that Tosfot explains it. Or Tosfot brings a second interpretation and says, it's a case where he asked his friend to watch the house. And in the house is a chereshot katan, people that are not b'nei dat. Then he can expect the behavior of these individuals will be to jump up or to jump down. And therefore, when he gives them the responsibility for the house, part of that responsibility is to watch for them jumping up and doing damage or jumping down and doing damage. So that's what Tosfot says. The chiddush over here is that you should know by Adam, the behavior to jump up and jump down is considered to be normal behavior. So for you yourself, of course you're chayav, because Adam mu'ad li'olam. But if you are taking care, responsible for a house, and there are people in there, like a chereshot katan, who are not responsible for themselves, you have to watch that they don't jump up and do damage, because you will be responsible for that, because that is considered to be normal behavior. So that's the other reason Tosfot says they brought down Adam. Vatanya. Don't we have another bright, kelev agdi shidilgu, ben milamata lamala piturin. Over there you are patur. That's the girsa that we have over here in our Gemara. As you can see in the Aleph in the Gra, the girsa that Rif in the Rambam is chayavin over here and not pturim. And you can see that girsa in the Rabbeinu Chananel, he says, Vatanya, kelev agdi, shidilgu, ben kach, uben kach, chayavin. So let's go with the girsa that we have, which is pturim. So here it sounds like kelev agdi, doesn't matter which way they jump, they are patur. Targum ha-rapapa, da'apach mepach. It's a case where they acted against their normal instincts, or against their normal behavior, which is kalba biskira, vigadjo bisricha. So the dog did it biskira. Skira is when you just jump, whereas sricha is where you dig your nails into the wall. So that's the opposite behavior. Normally the kid, which has hooves, doesn't climb up by digging its nails into the wall. It simply pounces. It stays down below and it jumps to get itself up. The dog, on the other hand, which has nails on its paws, over there it uses those nails to grasp and to move itself up to climb up an area. So therefore, if the dog acts normally and climbs up or down using its nails, then that's normal behavior. So normal behavior is for it to climb down. For it to climb up is not normal behavior. Therefore, you're patur when it climbs up, you're chayav when it climbs down. In our case, you're patur for both of them because the dog acted unusually and instead of using its nails to move around, it just jumped without using its nails. And that's completely unusual behavior, and therefore you're patur in either case. On the other hand, for the gdi over here, it's normally would just jump. So when it normally jumps, it jumps down, doesn't jump up. So you're chayav for down, patur for up. Over here, where it didn't jump, but rather used its hooves and tried to use its hooves to gain traction to climb up, that already is unusual behavior, and then you'll be patur both for going up and going down because the behemah acted out of the ordinary or not in an unexpected, completely unexpected manner. Yochi amai pturim. Wait a minute. If that's the case, why are they patur? I understand that this is unusual behavior, but even if they are unusual behavior, that would make it into Karen and not into the normal behaviors of whether it's Shane or Rego, whatever's happening over here. Patur mi nezek shalem, b'chayvim b'chetzi nezek. You're right. When we say patur over here, we don't mean patur the gamre. We mean patur from nezek shalem, but chayav in chatzi nezek. Tosfot says over here, da'apik meichach, and he says over here, wait a minute, why isn't this your case of tchilato b'pshia? The sofo bonus. I mean, this is a classic case of, had it just done in the normal manner, you would have been chayav, the gamre. Now that it does it in an unusual manner, you are patur, or at least you patur from nezek shalem, you pay chatzi nezek like Karen. Why isn't this a classic case of tchilato b'shia, the sofa bonus? Because over here, if the animal did it in a normal manner, you'd be chayav. Now it does it in an unusual manner, you are patur. Says Zeish Lamar, Dolomar mishum tchilato b'shia legabe regel, v'chayav nezek shalem legabe Karen. Very interesting. You can't say tchilato b'shia for regel to make it into a sofa bonus by Karen. Meaning that you can't connect between those two items to say it's tchilat b'shia of a sofa bonus because you're dealing with different categories. You can't say because you're posheya by rego, therefore it has influence by Karen, or that the Karen is considered to be bonus. Tafilu posheya gamor le'inyan Karen lo chayvo Torah lechatzi nezek. Because even if you're a complete posheya by Karen, you're still only chayav chatzi nezek. I mean, that's the nature of Karen. If that wasn't the case, arish nichnas lechatzir anizak b'taraf fachal lechayiv. The case where the lion goes in and kills the animal and then eats it, you'd be chayav, because the normal behavior of the animal is to go in and eat it while it's still alive, to be dores. So now if you're doing dores is normal and it does taraf, you should be chayav nezek shalem because it's tchilato b'pshia b'sofa bonus. So we don't say that, because even if it's a posheya by Karen, then you would still be chayav chatzi nezek. And so therefore we don't extend this principle of tchilato b'pshia b'sofa bonus is not applicable or not relevant over here, because you could call the whole thing pshia, and this din would still be the same across the board, because it has nothing to do with the negligence or the behavior of the owner over here. It something has to do with the normalcy of this behavior for the animal. All right, now, you asked about what happens for the Rif and the Rambam. The Rif and the Rambam will say that v'atanyo, hakelev akdish dilgu ben mala ben lamata mala chayavin. They say that both of those cases, you are chayav when it goes up and goes down. So Targum HaRapapa, Rapapa explains the apaf mepach. The case where you are patur is in a case where they reverse their behavior. Meaning that this braita says you're chayav. Up or down, you're chayav. That's normal behavior for the animal. When in the previous braita we said you're patur when it goes up, that's when it's apaf mepach. It went up in a manner that was unusual. Since it went up in a manner that's unusual, you were patur for the ascent of the animal in that case. Normally, they would ascend, and that would be normal behavior. So what turns out is that for Balei Tosafot Rashi and the other Rishonim that had the Gemara of our Gemara, the animal's behavior is only normal to go down, not to go up. And then even with going down, that's only normal in a certain manner. If it's not totally normal, then going down would also be patur, or at least patur from the chatzi nezek, because it acted unusually. On the other hand, for the Rambam, the Rif, up and down is normal behavior of the animal. You're going to be chayav in all those cases. The only other time you have a dispensation is when it goes up in this unusual manner. It goes up in a way that wasn't normal behavior. And that will explain not the breitha that we just brought over here, but Rav Papa is explaining the previous breitha, why are you patur? When it goes up, is because they reversed their actions, they changed their actions. So according to the Girsa we have, Rav Papa is explaining this last breita and explaining why you're completely patur in the last breita. According to the Rif and Rambam, Rav Papa is explaining why in the previous Braita, not the one that we just brought up, the previous Braita, your Patur, is because of the unusual behavior that was over there. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Chaf Bet, Amud Aleph.